Welcome to This Green Earth, a weekly talk show on environmental issues and concepts of sustainability. I'm Chris Cherniak.
I'm Nell Larson.
And joining us on the phone for our first part of the show is Dr. Lee Frelick. He's the director at the University of Minnesota Center for Forest Ecology, Institute on the Environment. And he's here to talk about an interesting event, we'll call it, that may or may not have occurred. We'll find out eventually, maybe in the spring, with respect to an invasive beetle called the emerald ash borer. Thank you already. Yeah. And perhaps what the extreme cold may have had on the populations of the emerald ash borer. And first, Dr. Frelick, thank you so much for joining us this morning on This Green Earth.
Yeah, good morning. It's nice to be with you.
So let's start with a little background. Let's talk about what is the emerald ash borer and why is it such a pest to, say, ash trees?
Well, it's an insect from Asia. Most of its range is in China, and it bores into the wood, and it kind of goes underneath the bark and disrupts the vascular system of a tree. But it turns out, because of coevolution over long time periods, the ash trees in Asia are adapted to it, and the populations are not huge there, so it's not killing lots of trees. Then it was introduced into North America near Detroit, coming over in wood, used for pallets probably. Some sort of wood was imported. And our ash trees here have no resistance to it at all. There may be a few exceptions to that, but in general they don't. And so it's able to achieve high populations and spread across the country with the help of people moving firewood made from dead ash trees from city to city. It can travel much faster than it would on its own. And as you said earlier, it's killed over 100 million ash trees.
So since it was first introduced in the early 2000s, or I guess discovered in the early 2000s, it's made quick work, as you referenced, of kind of spreading across forests in the U.S. Can you give us a picture of, like, where it is now?
Yeah, it's occupying areas from Pennsylvania. And I noticed in the latest map there is also a pocket down in Arkansas, but from Pennsylvania across Ohio, Illinois, Kentucky, and then up through Michigan, Wisconsin, Minnesota, and Iowa. And it's also present in the adjacent parts of Ontario, especially near Toronto, in the southeast part of Ontario.
So wherever there's ash trees, there is the potential that this bug may land there.
Yeah. And like I said, it's moved around by people in firewood, even though there are quarantine zones where you're not allowed to move firewood. Not everybody knows about the quarantine. And, of course, the officers on the road are not going to see every load of firewood and be able to check it either. So it is getting around that way, and that's how it's making the big jumps from city to city. Like Chicago to Milwaukee and then to La Crosse and then to Minneapolis, which it did in just a period of a few years in the early 2000s.
So the analogy we have out here is the pine bark beetle or other types of bark beetles that have devastated millions and millions of acres, and it's very extremely visual. And the fact that is what you're seeing too with ash forests?
Yes, ash is a common ornamental tree in cities, but there are also a lot of ash swamps out in rural areas. And they are very biologically rich habitats. Many, many species of native plants and animals use these ash swamps as habitats. For example, in northern Minnesota, we have almost a billion ash trees in our ash swamps. And that's the one place where they might be safe for now because of how cold it is there in the winter. So it's having trouble moving to the north of the Twin Cities because of the frequency of cold weather.
Okay. Well, we'll talk about that. What does cold weather do to, I guess, the movement or the health and wellness of a EAB?
Well, they have a temperature limit. They can deep super cool, which means they can get below freezing temperature without the water in the body of the insect actually freezing due to chemicals that they have in their body. But different individuals have different levels of susceptibility, so it's really a sliding scale. You know, at 5 or 10 below zero, a small proportion of the population might be killed. And when you get to 20 below, maybe you're up in the 50% or more range. And when you have temperatures like we had here in the Twin Cities around 30 below zero, it's likely that a very large majority of the individuals are killed. And what that does is it sets the population of insects back, and it buys a few more years for the lives of the ash trees.
So is there research going on to see, you know, what can be done to stop this emerald ash borer? Is there anything that people can do, you know, of course, aside from being aware of firewood and things like that, to help prevent the spread of the ash borer?
Well, there aren't a lot of other things that can be done besides just physically limiting the spread. I mean, we can remove trees that are infested quickly so that they don't spread to other adjacent trees. We can chemically treat individual trees so that the borers can't become established in those trees. And in urban areas, sanitation combined with treating trees, and especially with the occasional help of a polar vortex, can really slow the spread. But you have to remember, it doesn't get as cold in a lot of other places as it does in Minnesota. For example, in lower Michigan, which is kind of the ground zero for emerald ash borer, it only got down to temperatures of something like 5 or 10 below zero during this polar vortex outbreak, basically because the Arctic air mass had to cross Lake Michigan and a lot of heat was added to the air. And, you know, people in that part of the world often call me and say, will this kill the emerald ash borer? And they'll say, how cold is it there? And they'll say, oh, 5 below zero. Mm-hmm. And they think that's cold.
Right.
But, you know, in Minnesota, it wouldn't even register. Nobody would pay any attention to 5 below zero. So in places like Michigan and Toronto, you know, they're just not going to get blasts of air that are cold enough for really substantial setbacks in the insect population.
So you mentioned in relation to urban areas that sanitation is important. Will you expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, when you see trees that are in early stages of infestation, you know, which you can learn to identify that. The leaves up in the canopy start to thin out, and a lot of times the trees produce what we call epicormic sprouts, which are like branch sprouts that come right out of the bark on the main trunk of the tree. And if you see trees like that, do something about it. Either remove the tree promptly, or if it's in the early enough stages, you might be able to treat it so that the insects don't build up in that tree and spread to other trees. One of the problems we've had here in the Twin Cities is that there are a lot of ash trees in kind of neglected areas, like along railroad tracks and behind warehouses in industrial parts of the city that nobody ever looks at. And there's lots of standing dead ash trees there that served as sources of the insects to spread to other trees within the metro area.
You mentioned that there's some means of chemical control, you know, insecticides or so.
Yeah.
Are there any biological controls in, say, introducing predators of the ash borer?
Well, not that I know of yet. I mean, people are always doing that type of research, but there's nothing that's available.
Right. That's the consequence of an invasive species. When it's first introduced into an ecosystem, it doesn't have many natural predators because
right.
No one's ever seen one.
It takes a while to find something like that, and if you want to introduce a predator that comes from its native habitat on a different continent, you have to prove that it won't attack other insects that belong here. And it's a long, complicated process.
Right.
So for now, most people are using the trunk injection that's done every other year. And you can do that and save trees in urban areas, but, you know, for the billions of ash trees that exist out in the wild, we're not going to be able to do that at all. And so for the ash swamps in northern Minnesota, which are very valuable wildlife habitat, mm-hmm. And very valuable hydrologically in terms of the function of the whole landscape, we are worried that those could be wiped out and the landscape would be devastated by that. For now, in northern Minnesota, it's protected by the cold, but as the climate continues to warm, the areas to which the insect will be able to spread are going to continue to grow.
So you mentioned briefly how to kind of identify an ash tree that maybe is infested. Tell us about the insect itself. Is this an insect that's going to be very visible? You know, describe to our listeners what it looks like and that kind of thing.
Well, it's a pretty small insect, and it is really bright metallic green. You can sometimes see these exit holes after they've spent their time under the bark, and they morph into an adult insect. They make exit holes and come out of the tree, and then they can spread to other trees within a few miles at most. So sometimes you can see those exit holes on the trees.
Okay.
But basically they build up and then spread to adjacent trees as the trees behind them die. And they're not able to do that extensively in their native habitat, but whatever it is that controls them there is just not present here, and our ash trees, with a few exceptions possibly, are not very resistant. I did hear that there might be some white ashes in southern Michigan that were infested, and the insects left in the trees are still alive. So among the billions of trees out there, there may be a small percent that are resistant, and people, of course, are looking for those because those represent the hope for the future. And if they are indeed resistant, then those could spread across the landscape and kind of reestablish ash on the landscape, but that process would take centuries. And to develop a line of ash that you could sell in nurseries from those resistant ones is going to take a few decades. Just like it did for the elm trees after Dutch elm disease came through.
Right.
That was way back in the 60s and 70s, and now we have 25 different varieties of elm that are resistant to Dutch elm disease that people can plant. Maybe that will be the case 30 or 40 years from now for ash as well, or maybe not. You know, you never know if there's going to be some sort of insurmountable obstacle in trying to develop a resistant tree, but I'm always hopeful because every disease like this that I've looked at, and there have been many, many of them, there's always seemed to be some resistant individual somewhere that you can work with in order to reestablish the species.
Right.
We can even see that in the paleoecological history of eastern North America. For example, hemlock disappeared a little over 5,000 years ago in all of the sediments. Its pollen disappeared, and then it took 1,000 years to make a comeback. And it turns out it was probably an insect in combination with a severe drought that did the species in at that point. But there were survivors that were resistant and that were able to repopulate the landscape.
Conditions have also become a little bit different in order for a tree to repopulate the landscape. You know, there's not an unbroken, I guess, forest. We have, you know, developments and highways and other kinds of barriers that might inhibit that process now, right?
Well, yeah, inhibit the recovery of the trees, but
right.
Unfortunately it won't inhibit the spread of the insect because they can jump right over those types of obstacles.
Sure.
We're speaking with Lee Frelick. He's the director at the University of Minnesota Center for Forest Ecology, Institute on the Environment. We're talking about, among other things, the emerald ash borer and its impacts on ash trees, ash forests. So let's talk about one of the big issues, though, the trends toward a warmer world and what that plays. You've already mentioned, Lee, that that plays a role with emerald ash borer populations, because the less cold we are, less extreme cold events we have, the more it survives and continues to migrate. But in the absence of ash forest, or let's say this, in a warmer world, what does Minnesota's biological biodiversity look like over time?
Well, that depends on our future carbon emission scenario, but if we go for a business as usual scenario, which looks like we're going to do, that's the track we're on right now at least, the temperatures will warm quite a bit during summer and evaporation rates will go up, and that will make the climate drier. So between the Rocky Mountains and Minnesota is mostly grassland. And grasslands grow in a climate that has a moisture deficit. In other words, there's more evaporation each year than there is precipitation. Mm. So that zero balance in the water balance is right now in the very western part of Minnesota, and we project that with a very warm future, a business as usual scenario, that balance point could move as much as 300 miles to the northeast, and Minnesota could literally be deforested and have a climate that would only support grasslands in the future. So if you can imagine our iconic landscape, which is the Boundary Waters Canoe Area, which has 1,100 lakes with rocky shorelines, and we now have spruce and pine trees growing on those rocks, if you can imagine that kind of redecorated with prairie and a few scattered trees instead of boreal forest, that's the type of change we could be looking at.
So in relation to that change in ecosystem and the plants, what are the wildlife that you're concerned about in relation to, you know, losing the ash swamps, but also in relation to, like, this forest shift in general?
Yeah, the ash swamps support all sorts of bird life, so if we lose those, our bird diversity will go down, because they're just so biologically rich. They have abundant water available, and they're very nutrient-rich. They're the nutrient-rich swamps as compared to sphagnum bogs, which are very nutrient-poor. So they're really important for that reason. But, you know, last week it was minus 56 in northern Minnesota.
Ooh.
So it's going to take a bunch of global warming to bring that up to even minus 30, which would still kill most of the emerald ash borers. And that minus 56 was not a wind chill. That was actual temperature in
wow,
northeastern Minnesota, where most of these ash swamps are. So they're protected for now. But just the warming of the climate alone, regardless of whether these insects start destroying the forest, could cause big changes. For example, moose have been declining in northern Minnesota, and we think that's driven by a warming climate. So with that business-as-usual scenario, the habitat for moose would disappear from northern Minnesota, as would the habitat for lynx. And for birds, there would be many, many boreal bird species that would no longer be found in Minnesota. Maybe they'll migrate through, but they would nest further north. And one resident bird that I've picked out as an example is the black-backed woodpecker, which in a much warmer climate with different forest types or even grasslands would not live in Minnesota anymore, and it could be replaced by other woodpeckers like the red-bellied woodpecker, which I was absolutely shocked to find when I was in Ely, which is in northern Minnesota right near the Canadian border, that it's already been seen there. I had no clue that wildlife had already responded that much to the warming climate and had already moved quite far north compared to its previous range limit.
Well, Getting back to the ash borer, one listener wants to know the temperature. Let's say it gets down to minus 30 or minus 40, but is there a time period that's involved at that temperature, or is it instantaneous that the...
Well, if the insect gets that cold, you know, it'll freeze, and therefore it'll die because the super cooling won't work. So it does take some time because bark of trees is a good insulator, and the insects are under the bark. So it doesn't get as cold under the bark right away. But with the cold spell we had last week, you know, we had... one day where by mid-afternoon it was down to 18 below zero, and then it got down to 30 below at night, and the next day the high was 15 below zero. Then it was back down to 30 below zero the next night again, so it was long enough that you could be sure that it got down to temperatures that would kill the insect even under the bark of trees. So, yeah, if it just lasted an hour or two, it wouldn't get that cold under the bark. But this outbreak was quite prolonged. And then for those places where it was 50 below zero or more, I mean, it's hard to imagine that emerald ash borer could ever survive there at all unless we had a heck of a lot of global warming.
Okay. And one last question or so is, when will you know, quote unquote, any success related to this?
Well, people will look, some of the entomologists who work here on campus will look, I'm not sure exactly when, they might wait till spring, but they'll be able to see if there are dead insects under the bark and assess whether, you know, what proportion, if any, survived. And we'll also notice that there'll be fewer ash trees that are developing symptoms in the next few years. Now, this happened before. We had a cold but not extremely cold polar vortex outbreak in 2014, and it did set the beetles back.
Right.
But by 2016 and 2017, we were seeing trees with symptoms again if they weren't treated. So,
right.
At temperatures like that, it's just a temporary setback. Some will survive and reproduce, and in a few years, the population will build back up. But I would expect we'll get a reprieve for a few years here, and it'll be interesting to observe because we haven't really had a cold spell as cold as this one since the emerald ash borer was in the region, because the last time it was this cold was 1996.
We got to wrap up. Where do people go to learn more about the work you do?
Well, they can Google the Center for Forest Ecology at the University of Minnesota, look at my web page there, and a lot of the publications that I have worked on are available there if people want to read them.
All right. Fair enough. Lee Frelick, the director of the University of Minnesota Center for Forest Ecology, Institute on the Environment. Thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us this morning on This Green Earth. It was great.
Yeah, you're welcome.
We will be in touch. Maybe we'll check back in the late spring or summer to see, get an update.
When the emerald ash borer hits us here in Utah.
That's true. Or the pine beetle, yeah. Thanks again, Dr. Frelick.
Okay, you're welcome.
All right, let's take a break for Underwriter or so. When we come back, we're going to talk about